Why do I still refer to her as Miss Pink so many years since she passed away? It's because I knew her, and having known her, I still would not presume to refer to her otherwise. My association with Miss Pink goes back to the 1950s. In those days, there were a number of eccentrics in Alice Springs and out in the bush. One highly intelligent person among these was Miss Pink. At first, I knew her by sight, a slight little lady who wore white clothes and a pith helmet in summer. Sometimes in winter, she wore a tartan skirt, used a shawl, and wore a beret. She walked alone along the footpaths, just a distant character. In 1956, I became a member of the staff of the Herbarium of the Northern Territory, which was then headquartered in Alice Springs. That was when I became acquainted with Miss Pink personally. She was by then domiciled on her property, now here the Olive Pink Botanical Gardens. She visited the herbarium to ask questions about local flora, seeking advice from the Northern Territory botanist. She made an immediate impact on myself, then just 21 years old. Her eyes were the eyes of a dominant person. Hers was a personality that demanded attention. Her demeanour was that of a person who knew precisely what she wanted. No words were wasted and no frivolity was to be entertained. I have kept a diary for many years. I noted in 1956, Miss Pink called into work today. There is no explanation as to why Miss Pink called, just the fact that she did call was noteworthy enough. My real friendship with Miss Pink began in 1960. In that year, I acquired a new Holden ute. While driving along Todd Street one hot afternoon, I saw Miss Pink walking along with a spring bag of groceries. She looked rather distressed, so I offered her a lift home, which she accepted. I don't think she ever forgot this, as she would smile when we met subsequently, and that also was something of note. Three people worked in the herbarium of the Northern Territory, the botanist and two assistants, of whom I was one. One day Miss Pink called in to speak to the botanist and shortly left with a thunderous look on her face. She had requested that Rosie Dock, Hassatosa vesicaria, which she called that filthy plant, be placed on the list of noxious weeds in the Northern Territory. The botanist refused the request and said that he thought it was a rather pretty plant. As far as I know, Miss Pink never again spoke to the botanist and referred to him as the beast. What the other assistant did to annoy her, I'm not sure of, but he became her bête noir. So that left me. I've remained friends with both the men who became the beast and the bête noir. They left the MP later in the 1960s. And I've never had the heart to tell them of Miss Pink's designations of them. I was engaged in a great amount of bushwork, and Miss Pink would ask me to collect various things for her. I recall bringing her small spinifex plants for her garden from the sand plain a bit over 100 kilometres north of Alice Springs. I brought her ferns from under mulgars, a plant called Macrogoria racemigera, also from the spinifex country. This was a favourite of hers and she called it spinifex snow. I brought her ripe desert oak cones and lots of other items from around the bush. And one day I intend to go through my diaries and get a list of them. During the 1960s, I was appointed as an inspector of noxious weeds in the Northern Territory. It was after this appointment that I was invited by Miss Pink for a memorable tour of her gardens. She conducted me along a row of planted river red gums, each of which had been named after someone. This was Miss Pink's way of expressing gratitude to those who did favours for her. She'd introduce you to the trees, this is Mr. So-and-so, and I can't remember any of the actual names these days, but one tree was introduced with a stern voice admonished by, "I am not watering him anymore." He had fallen from favour. We came to the western boundary of the reserve, and the fence in those days was wooden posts and several strands of barbed wire, and it ran parallel with the Todd River. And eventually we came to a little ditch or a gully running at right angles under the fence. It's still there. In the gully was growing a large and healthy Opuntia cactus of the species known as Devil's Rope. Miss Pinko said, "Do you know that plant is on the noxious weeds list for the Northern Territory?" "Oh," she answered, "but you won't tell anyone, will you?" She put the plant there to act as living barbed wire to discourage the entry of intruders. What could I do? I didn't tell anyone, but I kept a watch on the plant, and luckily it stayed right where it was. Miss Pink was very protective of the place. It was a privilege to be invited there, and she objected very strongly to intruders. Sometimes jogging football trainees, as an example, were impudent enough to take a shortcut through the place. They would receive a severe scolding. One such person apologised to Miss Pink in a heavily accented voice. To Miss Pink's inquiry as to where he came from, he replied, "I come from Tasmania." "How dare you, she retorted. "I come from Tasmania." I heard her on at least one occasion refer to herself as the Tasmanian Devil. Since her passing away, I have learned many things about Miss Pink that I didn't know before. I knew nothing of her anthropological work. She would never discuss such things, of which I had just a vague idea. Anyway, I would never venture to speak on subjects other than those which she wished to discuss. Once I had the privilege of meeting Professor J.B. Cleland, who is a highly regarded anthropologist and botanist from South Australia. The meeting took place out bush on Harsh Bluff in 1956. He was a humble and very nice person. He celebrated his 74th birthday on that trip. It's only recently I learned that Professor Cleland had been one of Miss Pink's best friends for some time. Miss Pink did inform me of various people and organisations of which she had a dislike, and there were plenty of them. Innocently, I belonged to one of these categories, as I discovered one Sunday morning. I was walking home after an early church service and met Miss Pink along the way. To my good morning, she queried, "What are you doing out so early on Sunday?" When I answered, "I've just been to Mass," she retorted, "Oh, are you a Baptist?" I was not familiar with the term, but I worked it out pretty quickly, and I said, "Oh, I suppose I am." "Well," said Miss Pink, "I'll forgive you because you're such a nice boy." Miss Pink had a particular dislike for the public service, especially the branch known originally as Native Affairs and later as Welfare Branch. She also turned her negative attentions on the administration section. Miss Pink categorised people as friends or foes, the latter being referred to as the enemy. There was no middle ground, except, I suppose, for those whom she utterly ignored. Once I was asked to visit the offices of Native Affairs to discuss a botanical matter. I walked out of the premises just as Miss Pink came by. "Good morning, Miss Pink," said I. She wheeled around and fixed me with a penetrating look of hostility. I was mesmerised. Then her face relaxed and she said, "Oh, I thought you were one of the enemy." When she approached the administration offices, there would be quite a flurry. Miss Pink's coming would be announced. Some would suddenly need to go to the toilet. Office doors would close. Others would remember urgent outside business to be done. So when she entered the foyer, there would be a remarkable lack of personnel, except for perhaps two people. One of these was the housing officer, Maurie Morrow. As I witnessed once, no one in the universe could say the things to Miss Pink that Maurie would say. "What do you want today, you old bag?" I was shocked. "Mr. Morrow, how dare you?" Came from Miss Pink, but it was only mock indignation. The two were, in fact, good friends. Maurie was another character of the times. He was known to have a fondness for strong drink, that, like Miss Pink, did not suffer fools gladly. He treated all people as equals. Rank meant little or nothing to him. He was a kind and generous person, not averse to bending rules to be of advantage to those who may be in need of help. Quite obviously, he was helpful to Miss Pink and was held in high regard by her, and was definitely a candidate to have a tree named after him. The other person who remained on the scene when Miss Pink entered the admin offices was the girl who collected payments from the public for government services, power, water and so on. She was confined to her little cubicle near the entrance. Miss Pink admired a cameo brooch worn by the young woman. They became acquainted, and Miss Pink described the girl as a polite young lady. Where is she? One day, Miss Pink noticed that her polite young lady, Patricia Collier, was wearing an emerald engagement ring. She asked some questions, and it was revealed that Pat Collier and myself had become engaged. We were invited to her home here for a celebration, just for half an hour. Well, we partook of sherry, cake, Bickford's lime juice, and afterwards there came a cup of tea before we left, having spent a memorable 4 hours. Later that year, she sent us a card, which we still have. In due course, Pat and I married, and in 1963, our first child, Alexander, was born. Miss Pink had anticipated this event, having noted the cot being carried on the back of our ute. Once more, we were invited to Miss Pink's place for a pleasant visit while she admired our firstborn. We are fortunate to have experienced such a human side of Miss Pink, not known to many others. Alex today has been acting curator of the Olive Pink Botanic Gardens, has performed maintenance work there, and is the secretary to the Board of Trustees. I know Miss Pink approves. Miss Pink had a lively imagination. To illustrate, she arrived at the herbarium one morning and declared, "You have a Nazi spy working in this place." Such a remarkable statement had to be investigated, and I was able to ascertain its origin. The animal industry branch to which the herbarium belonged also had a chemistry laboratory attached to it. Among the chemistry staff was Harry Granitz, yet another of the characters of the era. Harry was a Latvian with an excitable personality. His accent was rather Germanic. He was getting along in years and his eyesight was pretty poor, which was quite a drawback for a laboratory worker. He refused to use glasses in case he surmised he became dependent on them. His mode of transport was a bicycle. Harry was determined to become Australianised. One way to do this, he reckoned, was to learn to throw a boomerang. Early in the mornings, Harry would cycle to the Todd River. There, in the dry, sandy riverbed, just down there, he would throw and retrieve his boomerang. When he had tired himself out, he then sat on a log and would hold a transistor radio to his ear for some time. This performance was carried out close to Miss Pink's fence. Harry never noticed that Miss Pink closely and curiously observed him. One morning she made her move. Down into the river she went to confront Harry on his log. "What are you doing?" she demanded. Whatever explanation Harry gave apparently did not satisfy her. Her imagination produced a Nazi spy getting his orders via his little transceiver. I was happy to be able to inform Miss Pink that Harry was in fact a quite harmless member of the community. So the matter was dropped, and that reminds me of the way in which Miss Pink sometimes brought a conversation to a conclusion. You would be discussing a topic, then Miss Pink would suddenly, abruptly turn away and walk off. "No, that will be all, or I'll see you later." The subject was definitely closed, and that was that. This was one of her idiosyncrasies. If you were prepared to acknowledge it as such, you weren't offended, you just simply accepted it. Once I suggested to Miss Pink, and in retrospect I wondered that I had the temerity to do so, that eventually her property should be named in her honour. She objected strongly to this idea and told me in great confidence the Aboriginal name which she had chosen for the place. She instructed me to forget the name, and I obediently did so. It exists in the garden's records. I am, however, gratified that the property on which she spent so much energy and deliberation is, contrary to her wishes, named in her memory. Many people who did not have close contacts with Miss Pink, either as friends or enemies, just viewed her as a strange old lady, perhaps a bit lacking in the brain department. This was certainly the surmise of some children of the times. However, when you got to know her, it became apparent that although a true eccentric, this was a lady of superior intellect with an acute and perceptive mentality. In 1971, I received what I considered to be a real honour. Miss Pink phoned me to tell me that she had named a tree after me. Subsequently, I went to the gardens to meet my tree, a corkwood or hakea. It's only recently that I learned that Miss Pink's given Aboriginal totem is the corkwood, so now I feel doubly honoured. Some people pass on and are soon forgotten. Miss Peake's memory goes on and gets stronger. She is a vital part of Central Australian history. The final tribute to her nonconformity can be seen in the Alice Springs Town Cemetery. The majority of graves there are clustered together, headstones facing east towards the rising sun. In the northwest corner is an isolated grave facing west towards the setting sun. Guess whose it is?
I'll at least take this bit off.